I know I cannot. I know I cannot live his life. It is as a thousand-petaled lotus to my simple daffodil. But to inhabit only my father's hands, punished in dough, tender sifters of flowers that became the bread that grew into me, would be enough. Certainly more useful than the soft-centered scribblings that these loafing fingers try without end to bake into a life resembling my own.
That was an excerpt from Harry's In the Event of True Happiness CD, which is also included in his latest poetry book release, Fractures. You are listening to The Sill with Peter Noce and Harry Posner.
Come on in, have a seat.
Join the conversation. Good morning, Harry. How are you?
Good morning, Peter. I'm well. How are you doing?
Great. How are things in the beautiful Annapolis Valley this morning?
Pouring rain. Been very, very wet spring so far, and the grounds are just soaking wet and muddy, and it's a bit of a mess. But we have to wait for the sunshine, and eventually it'll warm up, and the ground will dry up, and the horses will be happy again.
So today we're going to be talking about the presentation that you did at Acadia University, a free talk, a lunchtime learning program that the Acadia University puts out in Wolfville.
Yeah, it's a very cool program. Every Friday afternoon, there's a one-hour talk given by somebody who specializes in their field. So it's a variety of topics that are discussed, and it's free, and it's a beautiful little auditorium at Acadia University in the Environmental Sciences Building. And so I gave this talk on poetry called A Defense of Poetry in the Digital Age.
Which leads us to today's podcast. And this particular presentation, as I recall, we also did for the Probus Club in Orangeville in 2018, almost exactly 6 years ago.
Yeah, but it's still fresh, and I didn't really need to change it much at all.
This takes me to the podcast itself. When we first started this podcast, one of our main premises was to explore the area between art and technology. And this particular podcast is spot on for that, because this is really what we're going to be talking about today. It's relevance of poetry in modern times. I wanted to begin by asking you, poetry itself, the relevance of poetry in the digital age. How do you see that?
Wow. I mean, that's really the whole talk. It unfolds out of that question. You know, how is poetry relevant in the digital age? And so in the talk, I kind of touch on several concepts, if you like, or ideas, one of which is that the modern age, which has veered so profoundly towards a virtual everything, towards simulated everything, if I can put it that way, has set up a situation where people are feeling very isolated. People are feeling disconnected from the natural world in many ways and from each other. And poetry is a kind of antidote to the feeling of disconnection that we get from a world of simulated everything. Because in poetry, there is a level of authenticity, especially in good poetry, which really does reconnect the human spirit and soul to our roots, if you like. And it's a great antidote to feeling separated and alone and siloing in the world that we are in now.
So let me bring it back then, because I wanted to start the podcast off with a broad view of what we're going to be talking about. Poetry, as you know, is not something that everybody listens to or even understands, which leads me to this comment that you made in both presentations, actually. Poetry is a mystery wrapped inside an enigma, shrouded within a conundrum. That's your own view of poetry, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because in this talk, I kind of admit off the top, if you like, I confess that I don't get poetry, which is a strange thing to say, given that I was poet laureate of Dufferin County in Ontario for 5 years and call myself a poet, and I've written 3 poetry books and on and on. But it's the truth in a way, and it really reflects how most people see poetry as a kind of very odd, mysterious thing that is hard to access, that is kind of indirect and full of metaphors and similes, and everything is like something else, and it's very head-scratching for a lot of people when they read poetry. But my point is that poetry reflects life itself, because life itself is mysterious. There's the mystery of birth and death and everything in between, and what are we doing here, and what is the meaning of it all? And poetry, because it explores all of that more deeply than a lot of art forms, is itself a mystery. And so it's not a surprise that me and other people like me would still find it a mysterious nut to crack. So it's appropriate in a way for it to be a mystery, and we shouldn't be too overly concerned if we don't kind of get poetry, because poetry can affect us in ways that are subtextual, if you like, below the level of words. We can get a feeling, a mood, and a sense of the poem and what it's pointing at without understanding it necessarily with our rational mind.
Mm-hmm. And the word depth often comes up when poetry is discussed, because it seems to be a word that is used frequently in the description of poetry or things affiliated to poetry. So I would immediately go to its connection or relevance to relationships. So how do you view poetry in terms of its importance or significance in the human condition as it relates to relationships between people?
Well, this is a very difficult question in a way to answer. All I can say is that, you know, what good poetry does, and a very good example of that is Mary Oliver's poetry. She's a wonderful American poet. I'm not sure that she's alive at this point, but her poetry is so deeply connected to the idea of relationship with other human beings, with the natural world, with oneself, that it's very difficult to avoid that feeling of connection when you read her poetry. And I think we have an example of that. It's a poem called Wild Geese.
Mm-hmm.
Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination. Calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things.
When you read her poetry, you really get a sense for how deeply connected she is to the moment and to relating to the moment and to whoever is in the presence of the poet, whether it's a rose or another person. And so my sort of thought form during my talk was that what if we treated each other as if we were perfectly formed poems, as in a perfectly formed poem is a mystery and has a deep meaning and is profound. And so if we pay attention to it, we may learn something about ourselves and the world and life itself. And if each person were treated as if they were a beautiful poem, that would change the way we relate to each other in a very interesting way. So that was just something that occurred to me in terms of talking about relationships.
Mm. When we talk about poetry, not just poetry in itself, but writing in general, language, words, Shakespeare, Charles Dickens, we think of many, many people, men and women, who have been in this realm of writing, whether it's poetically, whether it's for plays and so on. So we're really talking about the language within our language. And you and I have often talked about the so-called deficiencies of modern living, some of the things that we've sort of traded off or given away in the aid of commerce and power. Could you expand on that a bit, Harry?
Yeah, with the rise of consumer culture, which has been with us for quite some time now, and advertising and, you know, jingles and words and sounds that are supposed to stick in the heads and remind us of how wonderful Kleenex is or Toyota or whatever it is, right? It's actually changed the way we look at language. And language is something that evolves. It evolves quite naturally. So if you look at the earlier poets and you look at Shakespeare, the language is quite different than modern communication. And so it has evolved. But in my view, it has evolved in a way that has kind of cheapened what language is about and what it's supposed to do. And it's made communication more surface-oriented. So, you know, in the internet, you have short forms, LOL. You have repetitive language that politicians throw at us constantly to make us think certain thoughts and support their rise to power or whatever. So what poetry does beautifully is it explores language itself in different ways. There are poets like E.E. Cummings, for example, who take words apart and put them together in different ways and create these unfamiliar wordplay scenarios on the page as part of their poetry. And it makes us have to kind of work different synapses to understand what they're getting at. And it actually changes the brain itself in some ways. At least that's my contention. So, yeah, I'm saying that language itself is something that poetry can help keep living and growing and changing in very unique and creative ways. Because what happens with language is that it atrophies and it contracts and it becomes habitual. And so poetry can help keep our language alive. And keeping our language alive means keeping our culture alive. So it's a chain reaction.
In a sense, you're also talking about maintaining a level of authenticity and distinguishing between simulation and virtual, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, distinguishing between simulation, virtual, and that world, and authentic experience. So you take a poet like Patrick Lane, who writes beautiful poems about being in nature and, you know, the visceral feeling of dismembering a deer that he's just killed in order to feed his family or what have you. And it's very visceral, but it's very beautiful and it's real. It's a real experience. When Mary Oliver writes about being in her garden and putting her face into the rose blossoms, literally into the rose blossoms, and in that moment she is no more, quote, than a 2 feet and a tongue. This is a real experience. This is authentic. She's not trying to sell us anything. She's not trying to make us think any thoughts. There's no commerce involved. And she's just inviting us into a moment, into an experience that she is having. And so that's the beauty of and the authenticity of poetry. And that can balance the whole world of simulated and virtual everything, in my view.
And there was something that you said. I recall hearing this quote also by one of our interviewees who was literally on her deathbed when she said it. And you brought it up in the course of your presentation. And the quote was, apprentice yourself to the curve of your own disappearance.
Yeah, and David White is the source of that quote. It was beautiful. I mean, I found it, funnily enough, I found it online in the simulated digital world, and that popped up, and I thought, wow, that's a beautiful statement. It really is powerful. I mean, so much of poetry, and my poetry in particular, because I'm getting older in my life, is focusing on mortality and death and our relationship to it and how we're facing into it, etc. And that quote really reflects the idea of gently and profoundly latching on to this flow, this journey, this curve that is taking us to the mysterious portal to wherever. And it's a beautiful quote, and I felt it was important to put that at the beginning of my new book called Fractures, that is just being released.
Perfect, because that was exactly where I was going to next, which is not only the book, the sort of an accumulation of many of your works over the years, because you've done poetry for many years now, and you've put out previous works as well. You and I have even put together an audiobook and a CD related to your writings. The question or the topic that I wanted to get into a little bit was this whole idea of self-publishing over and above the compilation of your material, some of the challenges you've run into in creating some of your works, including this very new release called Fractures. Beautiful cover, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, very nice. So please continue.
So the whole world of self-publishing is really interesting, and it's evolved quite a bit, of course, over the years. It's probably less than 20 years old, this notion of self-publishing. And in the traditional world of publishing, what happens is the author writes the book, sends either the full manuscript or a synopsis of it to a publishing company that then gives the author 6 to 9 months to wait around while they read all of the manuscripts that have been submitted to them, and then they choose what they're going to publish in the course of the coming year. It's a long, drawn-out process, and there's nothing more frustrating than sending off a manuscript to a company who hangs onto it for 6 to 9 months and then sends you a polite rejection, no thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when companies expect you not to submit that same manuscript to other publishing companies. So you're waiting around 6 to 9 months, they say no, then you have to send it out to another publishing company, wait around for another 6 to 9 months. It can take years and years to get your work out there, if at all. And so the self-publishing trajectory has helped a lot of writers get their work out into the world in a form which is actually can look very, very professional if, you know, designed well, through these printing companies, online printing companies. And then what happens is the poet or the author becomes the publisher, essentially, as well as the author. Then we would take on the same roles that a publisher takes on to get the book out, to distribution, to publicize it, and set up an author's reading tour, a book launch, what have you. And it's a lot more work, of course, but at least the project gets out into the world and can be born into the world. So I've done that for most of my books. I have had a book published by a traditional publishing company, and that wasn't a very pleasant experience overall. So I'm happy to get my book out on my own, publish it, and do all the legwork to get it known in the wider community.
What specifically motivated this particular publication?
Well, I had put out about 2 years ago, maybe three, a book of poetry, of spoken word poetry. And I'm doing slam poetry and spoken word for a number of years now. And I thought, let's gather that all together and put it out in a book called Blue is Bigger Than Brown. And that went out a few years ago. But I also knew and realized that I also had many, many poems that I had written that were kind of on-the-page poems that weren't written or designed to be performed. And I thought, this might be the time to do it. I just moved to Nova Scotia a year and a half ago. I've been feeling a little bit blocked in terms of my writing. And I thought, well, here's a project I can do. I already have a fair bit of writing over the past 20 years. I can pull that together into a book of kind of a best collection of poems book. And so I decided to do that, called it Fractures. And I'm releasing it in April, kind of officially launching it in April, somewhere in the area here. Maybe could be Canning, which is a small town close to where I live. Yeah, so I'm very excited about it, and I think it's a very good book.
Please inform listeners as to where they can get all your work.
Well, I have a website, like many people do. It's www.posnerbooks.com, P-O-S-N-E-R, books.com. And you can go there, and all of my books are up there, and they're available. You can purchase them through the website quite easily, and order as many as you want.
For the next 2 minutes, you'll hear two short poems from Harry's latest poetry book release titled Fractures.
The first poem is called I'd Like to Say. That poetry saved me from myself in that delusional way we sometimes do, as if, having moved this far away from love, we are, any of us, in any way truly savable. The truth is much more contradictory in any case. Poetry did not save me from myself. Nothing can save me from myself. Someone once said, "Give me a word and I'll give you a world." But poetic words, once given, are no longer retractable. The horses of Calliope, untethered, roam freely, like viruses become busy unmaking the planet. Maybe the only salvation is to try to unwrite the verses, let the ink flow back into the pen, let language lie fallow, silent in repose. And yet I still continue to scratch these lines into the sere landscape of Gaia's soul. drizzle these words onto the whitewashed surfaces of the psyche in the hopes that the world is, and I am indeed, savable, whether by poetry or protest or incoherent argument spattered with the blood of what history has shoveled at us from behind in the name of meaning. And the second poem is called Life is a Death Sentence. It's as simple as that. It's as haphazard as a random poetry generator that always ends in the dissolution of the poem into its constituent parts. Metaphors melting back into metaphoric slag, rhymes into syllables no longer rapacious for company, the heart of the verse losing cadence with each breath, until the fields of poesis are littered with broken words, letters jagged against the sky, meaning devoured by the white whisper of the empty page.
One of the other elements I think that is really important is for people to understand about poetry is that it's not just about flowers and love. It's not just a Hallmark sentiment expressed in words. Poetry is a contact sport. It's tactile. It's a visceral experience for the poet, especially, and often for the reader as well. And poems can be about many things. They can be about issues of the day. A lot of slam poetry that young people are connected to focuses on issues of the day like sexism and racism and all the other isms that are bothersome in society, and spend a lot of time focusing on victimization, if you like.
So I have a question with regards to what you just said. What do you think of rap? That's a form of poetry.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It really began as music and then became kind of more poetry, if you like. Rap is very social issue conscious. It really emerged out of the Black communities. And so a lot of it has to do with the experience of the Black community. I'm not a huge fan of it myself, but I understand why it gained popularity, because of its rhythmic musical quality and because of its very direct language when it comes to social issues and the Black experience. So I get why it became popular, and it really kind of paved the way towards spoken word poetry. A lot of spoken word poetry, slam poetry, has hip-hop rhythms or rap rhythms connected to it and reflects those rhythms. So as much as I don't care for the art form that much, I acknowledge its importance in the evolution of the poetic word.
Mm-hmm. Well, rap in many ways is a way of reaching a sector of people that you normally would not reach if you use standard formats.
Right. And we also have to recognize that even though poetry is not at the forefront all that often, think about the last number of U.S. president inauguration ceremonies. There has always been a poet, whether it's Maya Angelou or whoever, writing a poem specifically for that moment. That's a big moment and a big stage, and a lot of people are listening in and hearing poetry at these kinds of big events. So poetry has a function to play beyond the Hallmark sentiment. It really is relevant in more ways than people think or know.
Well, I think of music right away. Music is a form of poetry just with sound behind it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Bob Dylan, who is a songwriter, is a poet, really. His words are poetry as well as lyrics.
As you have mentioned earlier in this podcast, that we sometimes lose or have lost in modern life with our technology, with our fast-moving world, where we're not taking time to be more contemplative, to ease our minds, so to speak, and be able to focus on issues at hand rather than get carried away with all the fluff we're surrounded by?
Yeah, and there are also studies out there that have shown that the reading and writing of poetry can alleviate loneliness, anxiety, depression, and actually increases in the person reading or writing the poetry, their level of empathy for other human beings. So poetry is not just an art form. It's actually, it can be used as a tool to help people who are suffering in these kinds of ways. So I would invite everyone out there listening, especially in April, which is National Poetry Month in North America. People need to know that. Go out, support a local poet, buy their book, read a poem, write a poem, share a poem, give it some energy and some love, I would say. Give poetry some love.
Even if you're not so inclined, just think about it as a health proposal where you just kick back.
Yeah, yeah.
Shut down your phone, shut off your computer, sit in a chair or under a tree. The pure joy of just spending a quiet moment reading something that you can focus on and appreciate in its basic form.
Sure, you can have a relationship with a poem. You can make friends with a poem in a difficult time of your life that has helped you get through it. Lots of people mention songs that were important at certain moments of their lives, and there are people who can talk about poems that were very important in certain parts of their life. So you never know when you crack that book open what friend is going to pop out and help you through your difficult times.
Exactly. Well, that's a great note to conclude this podcast on, Harry. So once again, before we go, though, just repeat the website where all your work is placed and ready to go. And of course, there are things there they can read. There are things that they can buy and so on.
Yeah, it's www.posnerbooks.com.
Any line from any poem you'd like to close with, Harry?
Yeah, there's one. There are voices and questions in the wilderness of us.
Beautiful. Ciao, Harry.
Ciao, Peter.
The Sill is a Connecting Dots Media production, available at thesillpodcast.com.
Thank you for your donation to The Sill Podcast.